Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program very much. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 22nd, 2021. Sudan has arrested 20 military officers connected to Tuesday's failed coup attempt.
The situation is now under control and we have arrested all individuals whose names have appeared on the list of the investigative team.
And South Sudan's vice president is in the United States to drum up support for the Kiir administration.
Yes, we had some problems. And with these difficulties that we are going through, our people are expecting so much from the government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. More than 100 world leaders are in New York City for the 76th session of the UN General Assembly. The focus of this year's meeting is on boosting efforts to fight both climate change and the COVID-19 pandemic. Brazilian president, whose handling of the pandemic has been criticized, was the first world leader to speak Tuesday at the UN General Assembly. VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashar gives highlights of the events at the UN headquarters in New York.
So today was the first day of the annual debate. That's when the world leaders come and they make their speeches to the international community. And Joe Biden spoke. The U.S. president is always a big draw, especially when it's his first time speaking as the U.S. president. It gets a lot of interest. People want to hear what he has to say. And he spoke a lot about how the United States has left Afghanistan. And now that frees up like our resources to shift and fight the COVID pandemic and climate change, to really focus on improving people's lives and focus on peace and prosperity. And now that military involvement has ended basically for the U.S. In Afghanistan, which was draining resources.
So traditionally, the Brazilian president is always the first to give the speech at the General Assembly. How was his speech and what has been the reaction so far?
Well, I think he wasn't as fired up as he normally is in previous years because he's sort of a wild card. But there was some controversy because there's an honor system in place at the UN about vaccinations. And Bolsonaro has made a big deal about saying that he's not vaccinated. He did have COVID last year. He says his antibodies are quite high. And so he, you know, doesn't need to be vaccinated. I understand there's some skepticism in Brazil about whether he actually might be vaccinated, but and not saying. Mm-hmm. But he did take the podium, in a sense, violating the honor code here, that you, if you're speaking in the hall, you're essentially right, saying you're vaccinated.
And so Bolsonaro and his government have been criticized for the way they handled the pandemic. Did he address that?
So he did speak about the coronavirus in Brazil, and he sort of sounded a little sour about the lockdowns and things like that. He blamed those on local mayors and governors, but he said that they're bouncing back. They've created more than a million new jobs. And he said 260 million doses of vaccine have been given to Brazilians, and at least 140 million Brazilians have at least had their first shot. Even though he's a bit of a skeptic about COVID and vaccines, they're still moving ahead in Brazil and helping their people now. But as you mentioned, they had a really disastrous response early on.
So let's talk about that honor system. Is it working? Is there actually a way to know if people are following the protocols?
Yeah, we all know about Bolsonaro because he's made a big point of blabbing that he's not vaccinated. But the others really haven't. So, I mean, a lot of leaders have made a point of saying they are vaccinated, or like, for instance, President Biden publicly on film took his vaccination. So did the UN Secretary General, you know. Leaders like that want to try and be role models for their constituents. So in those terms, we think most leaders are vaccinated. And even if you're coming from a developing country that doesn't have great COVID coverage, for instance, we know 90% of Africans have not even received their first dose of of the vaccine. But right. I think we can probably expect that most African leaders have, because right. it's just, you know, the 1% always seem to get these things.
So, Margaret, the Taliban have asked to be allowed to send their own envoy to speak at the General Assembly after questioning the credentials of the country's former UN ambassador. How has their request been received?
The Taliban has sent a letter to the UN saying that they want to send their own ambassador here. Until now, and including today in the UN General Assembly, Gholam Isaaczai, who was the ambassador appointed by the previous government, has been representing Afghanistan. And he also continues, by the way, on social media and such to speak against the Taliban. So you have this situation where the Taliban is the de facto authority in the country, and their ambassador at the United Nations is opposing them. And they've formally notified the UN that they want to replace him, and they want to replace him with their spokesperson, Suhail Shaheen, who's quite well known. And this is one of these complicated in the weeds UN sort of situations that will probably not get resolved immediately. It will go to something known as the Credentials Committee, who examines the credentials of ambassadors and decides whether to accept them or not. So last we heard, the Credentials Committee wasn't going to meet until October or November. So it may get kicked down the road a bit, but it means we have a showdown brewing for the seat for the country of Afghanistan in the UN General Assembly.
That's Margaret Bashir, VOA's UN correspondent, talking to International Edition's Jackson Vunganyi. South Sudan's Vice President, Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, is in New York attending the 76th session of the United Nations General Assembly. Nyandeng says her team has been meeting with friends of South Sudan, including the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, to brief them on the implementation of South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement. She says the response of the international community towards her government is too harsh.
The country is going through the war. The war is the enemy of development and economy. And not only that, but also the pandemic also came. If pandemic can bring down the superpower's economy, what about South Sudan? It will be very difficult. So with this delegation, you cannot, that what we are using will not be paying the civil servant and the diplomat. But we are working on that as a revitalized government of national unity to see how we can clear the payment of our civil servant and diplomat. And also IMF and World Bank are also helping us on this. And that's why I have been meeting them. So at first they gave us some money to pay the civil servants, but also at the same time we are working as a government to see how we can pay our diplomat. Yes, the delegation is big. Some of them are coming for the issues. Like, for example, I'm coming with ministers, Minister of Health on the issue of COVID-19, Minister of Agriculture on the issue of agriculture, also Minister of Gender, for gender-based violence. There's also the UN need to hear, and the other technocrats that are coming with us.
As you head over to New York to attend the UN General Assembly, you are, of course, aware that the leaders at the Assembly are not happy with the performance of your government. The UN Security Council has an arms embargo on South Sudan imposed since 2018. It was just renewed in May. And it has a series of sanctions on individuals and entities in South Sudan. The head of the UN peacekeeping mission to South Sudan, Nicholas Haysom, in his briefing to the Security Council just the other week, he outlined significant challenges with the implementation of South Sudan's peace agreement, including the delays in implementing the security arrangements, the fragmentation of your government, especially the SPLM-IO faction, the Riek Machar-Garwij divide. What are you going to tell the world leaders when you speak to them at the UN General Assembly?
I'm not coming here to come and deny what was happening in the country, or no, to defend what is going on. Yes, we had some problems, And with these difficulties that we are going through, our people are expecting so much from the government. And what happened for many years now cannot be overcome just overnight. It is a process. We are asking our people to be patient with us. Also with the revitalized government of national unity, it's not only one party or two or three. There are many other parties who are involved. So it's not easy to convince everybody, because everything has to be done according to the chapters in the agreement. So if one party is not happy, it takes time for any resolutions to come out. So our masses are expecting so much. Yes, I know agreement is slow, but we are in the right direction. We are not lost. And this is what I'm going to tell the UN, that we are not lost, but we are in the right direction. And at the same time, we want them to help us in this one, because if people are sanctioned, the sanctions are after another, then you will not be able to do what you are supposed to do.
So you are going to ask the United Nations to lift sanctions and the arms embargo they have on South Sudan?
For example, one of the things that UN is not happy is we have not graduated the unified forces. And now if we are going to graduate unified forces, about 53,000, we are going to graduate them with sticks. And then you just send them to the community. They will not go to the barracks. What control the soldier is his gun or her gun. So if the arm embargo is there, how do UN expect us to arm those people they are telling us to graduate?
Let's talk about things back home a little bit. There is a group that emerged recently calling itself the People's Coalition for Civil Action. They have said that the South Sudan Peace Agreement is dead and that your government should step down. What is your reaction to that?
Anybody in the country has the right to say whatever they wanted to say, and they are entitled to that. But for me, I don't believe that the peace agreement is dead. Peace agreement is slow in the implementation, but we are going on the right direction and we are doing the right things. And if we graduate the unified forces, then in chapter 2, this was the how do you call it, the sticking points that we had with the government and IO and SAWA, because they're the one who have the army. So we are discussing those issues.
That was Rebecca Nyandeng Dimabior, South Sudan's vice president, speaking to Nabil Biagio here in Washington. Sudanese authorities say more than 20 suspects have been arrested in connection with Tuesday's failed coup attempt. Sudan's defense minister, Yassin Ibrahim, says security forces have arrested key leaders of the attempted coup. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Most shops and other businesses in the capital, Khartoum, were open this morning after the transitional government's announcement last night that it has arrested more key suspects believed to have been behind yesterday's failed coup attempt. Speaking to reporters in Khartoum shortly after a Security and Defense Council meeting, Sudanese Defense Minister Yassin Ibrahim said the coup attempt was led by Major General Abdulbaghi Al-Hassan Osman Bakrawi, along with 22 officers of different ranks and a number of non-commissioned officers and soldiers. He confirmed a preliminary investigative report indicating the goal was to seize power and undermine the transitional period.
The situation is now under control and we have arrested all individuals whose names have appeared on the list of the investigative team, and the investigation is underway with the rest of them to find out more details about the coup attempt. The situation has been contained in a short time through the vigilance of our security organs without causing any human casualty or property damage.
Sudanese political parties, armed groups, civil society organizations, and independent unions all condemn the failed coup attempt and call for a transparent investigation and information on the legal procedures being carried out against the perpetrators. In a statement released last night, the Sudanese Public Prosecutor's Office condemned the coup attempt against the transitional government and the constitution, calling it a criminal act that threatens the aspirations and hopes of citizens for a decent life. The United Nations, the African Union, the US, Great Britain and Norway, known as the Troika, and other foreign governments also condemned any attempts to interrupt the transitional period in Sudan through military means. Volker Perthes, the head of the United Nations Integrated Transitional Assistance in Sudan, or UNITAMS, condemned any military attempt to spoil Sudan's transitional period.
I categorically condemn the attempted military coup that happened Tuesday morning. The United Nations also condemns any attempt, whether through a coup or otherwise, to impede the process of democratic political transition and the pluralistic nature of the state, as stated in the constitutional document.
Perthes reiterated the UN's commitment to provide support for a democratic transition in Sudan.
I reiterate the continued commitment of the United Nations to provide assistance, advice, and support to inclusive civilian governance in Sudan. And I would like to assure the continuous support of all the stakeholders towards the inclusive transition process and achieving the aspirations of the Sudanese people for peace, stability, and democracy.
Although life seems to have returned to normal in Khartoum this morning, several military vehicles are still patrolling the streets of the capital and are visible around key government institutions. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, women in Tombora say giving birth is becoming a nightmare because doctors have abandoned the area. That story is coming up right after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Some residents and health workers in Tombora County say women have no access to maternal health services after health workers, including doctors and nurses, fled the area due to ongoing violence. Dr. Richard Kenau says maternal and infant deaths are likely to increase because insecurity forced many medical workers to flee the area. For VOA News, Siba Martin Murangi reports from Juba.
Residents say several women have died while giving birth because there were no medical workers to attend to them. South Sudan in Focus could not independently verify the claim. Dr. Richard Kinau, who worked in a Tombora County hospital before violence forced him to flee to the state capital, Yambio, says the number of maternal and infant deaths is bound to increase because all of the doctors have fled Tombora County.
If there is any case that needs surgical intervention, who will do that? Because in the operation theater, there are things that you need it. Doing surgery, or at least you need to be there like three. So those personnel, if there are two, it will be somehow difficult. You may try, but still, it will be difficult. So the doctors are not there. So the possibility of death there for patients needing surgical intervention very high.
Dr. Kinau says although medical workers would like to remain in Tombora and save lives, they are not going to put their own lives at risk. He says many health workers, including doctors, have been attacked. Veronica Moses says her sister recently died while giving birth. She said her sister was in labor for 3 days, but no trained midwife or doctor was available to attend to her needs.
When I gave
My sister died after being in labor for 3 days because the baby was not properly positioned. We took her to the hospital, but there were no doctors or surgical equipment in the hospital. Those unknown gunmen came and destroyed all the hospital and took away all medical equipment. The qualified doctors have gone back to their different locations. After 3 days in labor, Moses says the family took her sister to a traditional midwife, but she died shortly afterward. Grace Gabriel, who is 8 months pregnant, says she worries that when the time comes to deliver her baby, there will be no medical worker to attend to her. I am worried because they have broken all the hospitals and stolen all medicines. Even there are no doctors and midwives. The surgical kits too are not there. This is why I'm worried, because at the moment when one is giving birth at the hospital, there is even no mattress to sleep on and no plastic seats to help mothers. Chombra County Commissioner Matthew Mabenge says the best option would be to completely form a Western Equatoria State government, especially the Legislative Assembly, to end the fighting in Chombra County. Once that happens, says Mabenge, security forces can be deployed to protect health facilities, medical staff, and vulnerable mothers in Chombra.
Enough forces, then I can be able to deploy forces, clinical forces in a hospital where so they are there to access the services to the people. Because people are interfering and only there is no proper security for them. If I have a literal forces now to deploy in those places, I think things will run okay.
The conflict in Chombra started about 4 months ago, but has escalated in the past 2 months. In August, President Salva Kiir dispatched Western Equatoria state leaders to Chombra County to try to quell the fighting to no avail. For VOA News, I am Seba Martin Murangi in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Jonglo State, where the chairperson of the Anti-Corruption Commission in the state has resigned, citing lack of transparency and accountability in the state's financial system. Peter Paul Chol says he has been receiving intimidating messages, including death threats, while performing his duties. South Sudan in Focus could not independently verify Chol's claims. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Peter Paul Chol, the chairperson of Anti-Corruption Commission in Jonglei State, presented his letter of resignation to the office of Governor Dinay Jogjagur yesterday. Chol says he is resigning for personal reasons, but also says there is little accountability in the state's financial system.
Corruption usually thrives where there is no transparency and accountability, where institutions work in isolation. And this is currently what is happening in the state. Because if institutions and individuals can work in isolation, that is a very strong indicator that it can give room to corruption, because if institutions not work together, it will allow room for corruption.
Since being appointed to the post of anti-corruption chairman in February, Chol says he has received several intimidating messages, including death threats. He says some people wrote and signed notes containing death threats and threw them at his residence in July.
The institution tried to do its best in making sure that there is transparency and accountability, and to ensure that we tried our best to stick to the mandate of the South Sudan Anti-Corruption Commission, and that literally got us into some trouble with people that we cannot identify. But in summary, it has been turbulent for us.
Chol says he left Bor 3 weeks ago because the working environment was not safe for him, after authorities did little to apprehend the suspects who were behind the death threats.
If you are threatened with death threat messages and the person is not apprehended, there is no way you could say I'm safe. Even the bravest person will not feel safe. After receiving the death threat, you wrote a formal letter. I actually wrote the formal letter to the governor. I copied the rest of the institution, relevant institution, but nothing was done.
Gatkek Gony, a manager in Governor Chagur's office, confirms he has received Chwol's resignation letter on Tuesday. Gony says he scanned the letter and has forwarded it to Chagur, who is in Juba.
I received that document. There's no reason written why the chairperson is resigning, so they will discuss it there in Juba.
David Garang, an activist with the Bor-based Jonglei Civil Society Network, urges Jonglei state officials to provide a safe working environment for people working in independent institutions.
What I would like the government, especially the government, to do is to really to come up and see which institution is not providing its services and what is the reason why the institution is not providing the services. When there is anything behind or something that is constraining the delivery of the services by the institution, then the governor has to act immediately. There's no reason the person is being threatened and the governor is not responding.
Garang is urging Governor Chagur to provide a safe working environment for all civil servants, including the chairman of the Anti-Corruption Commission. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Mudu. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Let us know what you think about issues in our news. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We reserve the right to read your brief comments every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with Musa Juma and the song Sudan Mpya.
Viva New Sudan! Sudan Mpya! Mpya!
Yo quede pi Sudan y mami la mujer.
We have been listening to Musa Juma in the song New Sudan. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Macharoti yo matek sana Afrika Anyanyalita Joseph Lako Generali Joseph Lako Sam Sam.